We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. So we had a Facebook problem on Sunday, and so I'm back here on Wednesday and re-recording, and then afterwards Gene will do the post-production stuff to make it all work, and hey, look, I did well. I went back and found the same shirt. Anyway, a little lesson. Folks have been answering my question, and by the way, I would love to hear from you. If you'll just use the contact button, it'll get to me, and I'll email or text you. And here was one of the answers. Okay, Doug, here's what I hate about religion. My child has some sort of gender fluidity thing going on, and I don't fully understand it. And what I really don't know is how to be the parent that I want to be. It's very confusing because there's all kinds of experts contradicting each other, lots of opinion, and not a lot of clarity. So I'm struggling. What's the best way to love my child? What's the best way to talk about this? What's the best timing? How about puberty? How do I prepare a child for what's coming? And oh my God, the social messaging is already bombarding. My child's already being bullied, already being made fun of at school. So how do I protect and how do I prepare and how do I love? And so Doug, I need to talk about this and I long to talk about it with people who love me and who love my child, which would be my family. But I can't. Because their religion has God's holy truth about my child. It is sin, or it is mental illness, or God will heal, or the devil is destroying, or pray harder. And they're embarrassed. Like somehow my child's differentness harms their standing. Maybe before God, maybe before the church community, maybe society. So yeah. That I hate my religion, I don't like that, but I do. It broke my family. Well, in this part of the lesson, we're talking about how religion divides us and then how we might fix that. And Western religion, it does have an in or out instinct, sometimes subtle, sometimes powerful. We divide ourselves. And we especially divide ourselves from sinners. Those who don't do religion the way that we do, or those who behave badly. And the thing is, if you go into our ancient text, you can find our forebears telling us to do just that, to separate ourselves from those people. But keep in mind the axiom that we say all the time, yes, we do lose our way. We find it when we lose it, but we lose our way. And those ancient texts often record times when we did lose it. Many of our texts are actually morality tales telling us what not to do. Now, even as they are telling us to do this thing, if we have a deeper understanding of our tradition, we understand, yeah, don't do that. So we lose our way. Now, here's a quick recap of a few of the when we had found our way texts. Get ready? I'll come at them fast. In Deuteronomy 10, love the outsider. You were outsiders when you were in Egypt. In Leviticus 19, when outsiders or strangers are in your land, you treat them like insiders. You treat them like one of you. In fact, you love them. Love them the way you love your own. Exodus 23. And don't, for God's sake, don't ever oppress the outsider or the stranger. Don't ever let harm befall them while they are with you. And Exodus 12. Don't have a different set of rules for insiders and for outsiders. Have one set of rules so that everybody gets access, everybody gets opportunity. Jeremiah 22. Anyone who has suffered, help them. And if they're outsiders, especially, bring them inside. Galatians 3. Paul undercuts the very idea of the outsider. No Greeks versus Jews. He says, no slaves versus free or male versus female. No, these are made up divisions. We live in a oneness reality, he says. All of us are one. Everyone a member of every other one of us. And Jesus in Matthew 5. When our religion loses its way, he says, we settle for loving our neighbors and hating our enemies. But no, there's a bigger reality. There's a better reality. There's a source deep within each of us that is able to love neighbor and enemy, friend and foe, insider and outsider. So do that. Learn to love from that deep interior source. And when religion's healthy, it doesn't divide us. The thing that we've explored these 3 weeks, that religion is a dividing force. It doesn't do that. What it does when it's healthy is bring the excluded in. And any time we find ourselves dividing, that's a pretty good indicator that we've lost our way. But even so, it is an ongoing and constant and tenacious temptation to divide ourselves from others. And so, this morning, Jesus. Now, before I tell you this Jesus story, a little heads up, you're going to hear the word sinner. Now, that is a checkered word these days. It gets so abused that many people don't use it. But try and listen past the word and try and hear the pattern behind the word. Because whoever your them is, whoever your bad people are, that's where you can look for the pattern. Democrats don't call Republicans sinners or vice versa. But it's the same exact pattern you watch and see. Now, in our political world right now, we have other choice words. Those words will help us know that they are them and that they are the bad ones. So keep the pattern in mind. All right, the story. It's in Luke 15. It's one of our earliest Jesus stories. And there he is eating with, and here's the phrase, tax collectors and sinners. Now, that term, those words, are culturally and historically very loaded terms. They classify some people as bad actors who embody everything bad that is happening in our society. That sound familiar? And everybody knew who the bad people were, who the insiders were, and who the outsiders were. And everybody knew the social norms to keep them away from us. And there's Jesus seeing past the social norms and looking for the divine center that is resident in each of us and in them. And so, Jesus and the tax collectors and the sinners are hanging out. And he's not outgrouping them, not condemning, not shaming, not belittling, not shunning. No. They're just working on the spiritual journey together. And oh, God, for shame, they're having lunch while they do it. And that's when the religious leaders, the dividers, that's when they go bananas. You see that? Whoa. This guy purports to be spiritual. What is he thinking? What, the ancient laws don't apply to him? Look at him over there, talking to them, eating with them about spiritual things like they have standing to even be spiritual, which they do not. Damn sinners. And damn Jesus, masquerading as some kind of a spiritual leader and hobnobbing with them, and worst of all, having lunch with them. Now, I said earlier, we know we've broken our religion when we start dividing instead of gathering. Well, that's why I repeat so often the stories we tell ourselves. You hear me say that all the time. Because deep stories betray us all the time. They narrow the terms of our whole lives. Well, these religious leaders, the Pharisees, they had a story. Now, if you know the Jesus stories, you know that they're the bad guys. Nobody likes uptight, smug self-righteousness, so these are the bad guys. But as is usually the case, they weren't really any worse than anybody else. They just had a story that was betraying them. And their story was this. All of our suffering, all the things that we're going through, this is God's judgment upon us because we haven't kept God's commandments. We got too soft on sin, and we got too soft on sinners. We accommodated, we compromised, and they corrupted us. God has very clear rules about food and bodily secretions, about how we treat women and widows and children and foreigners, and they're good rules, but these people aren't following them, and they are corrupting us. And now God is punishing us. They don't practice justice the way that we do, like our rules tell us to. They don't practice integrity or generosity, not like we do. They don't show up to make sacrifices like we do. They don't show up at the feasts. They are sinners, damn sinners. And we tolerated them. And we tolerated their sin. But the Pharisees were saying, we're on it now. We are all about observing the commandments, every last one of them. We're all about getting everybody to be pure. No compromise, no middle ground, zero tolerance. Now, the word Pharisee actually means separatist. Their whole identity was to separate good people from bad. To be separate from impure was to be pure. because their story told them. It's those sinners that are keeping us under divine punishment. It's their fault that our crops are being carted off to Rome and that our children are starving and that our young men are being beaten and killed and crucified. We need God to save us from Rome. And God is never going to save us if we keep compromising on his commandments. And look at Jesus over there, hobnobbing with them, encouraging them, affirming them. Well, double damn on him. And remember the pattern. That word sinner, it can get in the way. But again, look for the pattern. And if you do, you don't have to look much further than your newsfeed. You hear those same words all the time in our culture right now. And as I said last week, if we ever do fix our religion, and especially this dividing people part, we will have a profound gift to give to our divided society that our divided society needs right now. That's why I gave this title to today's lesson, It's Harder to Hate People That We Know. Jesus, getting all up close with the sinners, he showed us how to get out of the mess that we find ourselves in now. You eat with the people that your story tells you are the bad people, and it turns out they're just people, just like you. You share life with the other. You tell and you hear one another's stories. But when we stay far away from the other, and the Pharisees were really good at that, separatists, well, it's easy to tell ourselves a story about their badness. It's easy to anonymize them. It's easy to see them not as flesh and blood, not like us, but rather as some disembodied representation of an idea, and not particularly a good idea. Well, if you want to read a powerful case study on this human tendency to depersonalize and to dehumanize the other in our own nation, this is a great book, Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. Now, be warned, it's painful to read, but it's painful like a root canal is painful. It hurts, but not getting the infection out is worse. This book helps us see how we fall prey to the anonymizing and to the depersonalizing and doing it to whole groups of human beings and making that group somehow separate from ourselves, which in turn makes it so much easier to dehumanize the whole bunch of them, make them all different in our minds than we are ourselves. It's a book that every American should read. So here's Jesus eating with the anonymized, eating with the dehumanized, the tax collectors, the prostitutes, because that's how you get out of silos. You and I, we did not create the silos that we live in. That happened because of long-standing policies designed to keep us separate in our housing and in our education and our shopping and our social networks, more recently even to keep our news in separate silos. We didn't create these silos, we just woke up in them. Many of us woke up in middle-class suburban silos, many in white people silos, some liberal, other conservative, some educated, some not, some Christian, some religious, some anti-religious, but silos all. And we classify ourselves according to being in this group or that, saying these words or those, deciding together what is good or what is true. Now, the good thing about that is it gives us a sense of belonging. We feel like these are our people. But it also takes away something from us, something really profound. We give away when we do that the deepest story of all, that we are all, every one of us, human. And as such, we are all, every one of us, carriers of the divine light. We lose that sense that there is more of a connecting reality than a dividing reality, that we are more one than we are two. And if we're going to get out of this, what I heard on the news described as a national shit sandwich this week, if we're going to do that, Jesus showed us how. It's going to require that we go against the grain and get out of our us silos. Now, in a way that would work for us, we have to figure out how it is that people sit down and eat with whoever is our tax collector. I don't imagine it has to include food, and it probably doesn't include tax collectors. The principle was highlighted by Brené Brown in one of her books. I can't remember. It's the same principle Jesus is highlighting for us. I think the subtitle in one of her books was, People Are Hard to Hate, Close Up, So Move In. People are hard to hate, close up, so move in. When we stay far away, it's easy to keep people as those anonymous representations of an idea, which makes it easier to name call, to depersonalize, to define people by their worst day, and to define them by their most ridiculous trait. Far away makes caricaturing easy. That's just the way they are. They're all that way. It's easy, but it's toxic. It's only easy, however, when we're far away. When we get close, when we eat together, dehumanizing is much harder, depersonalizing much harder, telling ourselves that they are fundamentally different from us. Yeah, we see it. It's not true. It's easy from far away, harder when we know someone. But we human beings, we are human beings. And when we tell ourselves a story about differentness, it doesn't take into account that we all eat, we all sleep, we have the same brain wiring, which means we share the same fears and we follow the same life cycles. We all worry about adolescent things when we're adolescents. Will we be accepted? Will someone like us, love us? We, as we get older, we worry about jobs and lovers. We worry about kids. And when we get older still, we eventually worry about our aging parents or whether we will have saved enough to die a good death. But shared humanity is easier to not see when we are not together, when we stay separated, when we stay far away. When we stay far away, moralistic, simplistic judgments, easy. It sure makes it easy to not hear each other out, to not change how we think because we've seen a bigger picture, because we've learned something from someone by seeing through their eyes. Yeah, that doesn't happen far away. And that whole mess gets a whole lot harsher when we hurt. Because you and I, being human, we have hurt instincts. And one of those is to lash out. If you've been hurt, you hear me say it all the time, hurt people hurt people. So when we hurt, we've got an inborn instinct to hurt someone else. Now, we've been socialized, so we know we shouldn't do that. Religion tells us so. Mom told us so. It's not really allowed. It's frowned upon. Wouldn't be good. So now we're in a human predicament. We've got this strong inborn instinct to hurt, and we've got all of these social constraints that tell us to not hurt. So what are we going to do? Well, thank God for brain tricks because they help us out of that predicament, because our brains have this nice little dehumanizing trick. If we don't eat together, if we stay far away, we get to tell ourselves this story, and our brains will stitch it together for us. Sure, they're human in kind of an abstract way, but they're not human the way that we are human. They are a group, which means they are all the same. We know we're all different from each other, but they all the same. And their sameness, by the way, is that caricature. Our brains outsize their immorality. That's what they are. Our brains outsize their toxic beliefs. That's what they are. Their bad motives. That's what they are. And so our brains classify them not as human beings like we are, but more of a thing. Thank you, brain trick. You're going to help us out here. Here's what the thing is currently. Socialists. That's what they are. It's a thing. Fascists. That's what they are. It's a thing. We find just enough truth so our brains can do this trick for us and in the process give us, here's what we wanted, impunity. Now, oh, what a relief. It's okay to hate them because they're a thing. They're not a person like me. It's okay to hurt them. It's okay to outgroup them. It's okay to name call on national television. It's okay to demonize. It's okay to exclude. It's okay to disrespect. And looky here, they're doing the same thing too. So now total impunity. We're fine. Social constraints be damned. Thank you, brain tricks. Now we can hate. We can hurt. Now we can do that. We are doing it. And we can destroy our nation in the process. Or we can follow Jesus and eat with tax collectors. Now, our nation hasn't gone as far down the rabbit hole as other nations have. We're not in civil war. We're not having genocide. There's no door-to-door warfare in the street. But we're some of the way down that hole. We like to tell ourselves that could never happen here. or America, but really, all we're talking about is degree. What we do to each other from far away, on social media, on our favorite news outlet, it's the same thing that the Turks did to the Armenians, the same thing the Hutus did to the Tutsis. It is the brain trick that we use when we need to justify violence and torture and genocide and raping and enslaving. We dehumanize first, and then our brains will allow us to do the unthinkable. Now, I've seen enough in the last couple of years, things that I thought were unthinkable, that I am a little bit worried about how far down this rabbit hole we'll go. And dehumanizing, staying far away, that'll get us there. We create the environment, the faraway environment, and then our brains will do the rest for us. Hatred gets easy. And here's the thing, we're doing it already. We're already dehumanizing one another. We're already name-calling and demonizing, excluding and disrespecting. Now, for God's sake, if you're doing that, stop. But worse than that, our brains are performing this insidious little trick well below the level of our awareness. It's the cycle. It's the stay far away, then anonymize, then depersonalize, then dehumanize. Now, my prayer is that the dire consequences that we are already seeing will shake us awake enough that we don't go any further down this road. But we have to be honest with ourselves. The forces that are marshaled to keep us on this road, the media forces, the social media forces, the pay-per-click forces, they're formidable. There is no guarantee that we won't keep going. Unless somebody does something different. Somebody grassroots like us. So that's my question for today's lesson. What are you going to do? Hear now, small, doable? Yes. Achievable, sustainable? Yes. But not nothing. What are you going to do? Jesus gave us the roadmap. You find a way to get closer to the one who has been your other. How are you going to get out of your silo? See if something comes to mind right now. And if nothing does in the next day or two, you can always read. You can always listen to stories. Right now, most of the New York Times bestsellers are telling stories about what it's like to be black in America. And for many of us, that is far away. And for that, all you need is a library card or an Audible account. That could draw us closer. Or for you, maybe it's family. See if there's a way that you can see more than the crazy politics. Maybe that's not doable for you right now or yet. But before you dismiss the whole idea out of hand, check. See. Is there something that I could do? And if not any of those, what are you going to do? Indwelling divine, may we be open to the untapped resource, the inner divine, and may we practice the tools that help us tap in so that we become better people, building a better world, healing our souls, healing our religion, and healing our world. Amen. Before we go, I am going to be talking in the weeks to come about an organization called Braver Angels. In the meantime, why don't you go ahead and click on their website. Look at what they're doing to begin to bring people together to have civil conversations about very dividing subjects. Our just braverangels.org. So next week I'll do Scott's finance report. It came in this week, but we were a bit down. And remember what we say, if you get to keep your job, investing in a spiritual community, it's a good investment. Ours is a healthy community. The return on investment is high. So the donate button is on our website, and please do donate. Now, since we're not live right now, the what are you thinking, I'm just going to reconstruct from memory. I remember the first thing Scott said was, boy, that's more Bible verses than I've ever heard Doug say. I thought that was funny. Michelle said something about, defending is exhausting. What if we came to our positions but didn't feel we needed to defend. I thought that was insightful. Sarah, Miliki, I think it's either Miliki or Miliki. I think it's Miliki. Said, you know, this is exhausting, Doug. If I move toward the other, it takes all of the emotional energy, the time, the bandwidth. I just can't be willy-nilly about it. I've got to be very careful about it. And I thought that was also insightful. Every yes that we say is a no. And so we have to be very careful. And we emphasize that a lot. That's why we say the mantra, here now, small, doable. It's got to be sustainable. You got to be able to do this today and tomorrow and all the tomorrows before, between now and your last breath. Because these things that we deal with are long-term repair issues. So yes, everything Sarah says is true. But for today's lesson, here's what I want you to hear. Do not do nothing. Every one of us, like a yeast, Jesus said, a very small thing, but one yeast becomes two and two becomes four. And a mustard seed, you know, one plants and many are given. It's the smallest little thing we do, but it eventually changes the whole hillside. So let us not do nothing. Pay attention to what Sarah said, but let us not do nothing. All right, well, if you would, put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go that we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine. Everything that we need is in us already. And if you would extend your other hand to our city, let's look for opportunities to share what is in us with the people that we live and work and go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. God bless you. We're dismissed. See you next week. Bye now. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.